Hey, I'm Melissa McHugh McGrath.
Melissa is this amazing dog trainer, podcaster, and author in Somerville, Massachusetts.
I train humans so their dogs are happy and well-behaved.
And I'm Sip Sipperstein.
Sip is a dragon veterinarian in Oakland, California.
Yep, I'm a doctor for bearded dragons and bunnies and birds and other critters.
And you've just landed in Totally Possum,
an animal podcast for adults.
Each episode, Sip and I will use our combined expertise to share amazing animal stories, give you an inside peek into our professions, go deep-ish into animals in the news, and maybe even reveal some tips that you will be glad to know if you have pets at home.
A stew of the practical and the just plain silly.
It's a Zootopia party, and we're determined to have some fun. We are not going to watch our language.
We're letting our hair down.
You just don't know what we might say, so cover your children's ears. You've been warned. Unless your kids are cool with massive piles of kinky cicada sex, magical raccoon dog testicles, and occasional swearing.
It's your call, folks. I think you read Mary Roach's most recent book.
I finished it
a couple weeks ago.
It's so amazing. Good.
Mary Roach is amazing at everything she does. She wrote Gulp and Boink and Packing for Mars, and her latest book is called Fuzz, which is about the intersection of people and animals and when those things go wrong. And I thought it was really fascinating, the section on why deer end up deer in the headlights.
Oh, right.
And explaining like the anatomy of the eye and what they're seeing, and they are seeing the lights. What they can't do is see that something's coming toward them. And then they they did some sort of a different color light.
I think it was a different color light, or it was a flashing light. They had changed the light in some tangible way so that way the deer could hopefully see it.
Yeah, that the deer's eye would make sense of something approaching as opposed to just these static lights, and that it seemed to be working. And it was just a really cool attempt to solve this problem of deer getting hit, because, of course, the deer get killed, but also depending on how big the animal is, when they get into moose and stuff and where their legs hit the bumper and so forth, then they become projectiles into your windshield opposed to bouncing off to the side. And so it's also human safety thing. But
well, deer are interesting, too, because it's not just the deer in the headlight thing. That's dangerous, and it's all sorts of bad. But the other thing about deer is that as a prey animal, they can run really, really fast. And so if there's a predator coming towards them, one of their defense mechanisms is to basically run perpendicular to the oncoming predator. So predators running, they run basically perpendicular to it. So that way then the predator has to slow down, turn around, and then catch up, which they can't do very easily.
Right.
That works really well in the woods. That works less well when it's a Buick. And so that's why when you see a deer, not the ones that are standing there, deer in the headlights, but the ones that jump out in front of you at the last possible second, they do that because nature works really well with other nature. It works less well with modern advancements of cars.
Exactly. And Mary Roach discusses that as well in her book.
Yeah.
Go read Fuzz. You know, it has a different title. So the title, and I'll have to do a little edit here. The title in the U.S. is Fuzz, When Nature Breaks the Law, which is a quite fine title. But her U.K. title.
Oh, this is going to be good.
I found it.
Yeah. Oh.
Mary Roach's UK title for her book is, I love this so much, and I wish they'd use this in the US, Animal Vegetable Criminal, When Nature Breaks the Law. It's so good.
That is so good.
It's so good. Oh, yeah. That makes me happy.
Queen. She's
Queen Mary.
My queen. Oh, I was going to say, that was actually a book that I accidentally purchased twice. And I think I told you this. Like, I was so excited. I bought it because, my God, the intersection of animals at humanity when things go wrong is 1,000% like the Venn diagram of everything that makes me happy. With the exception of like alcohol and schadenfreude. So it's basically like everything I need. And even then, there were some alcohol stories in there with like elephants and stuff. But
yeah.
But for the most part, when I saw it, I pre-ordered it on my Kindle. But then, like, I went out in our new town, and there's this cute little bookstore. And when I walked in, I saw it on the shelf, and I got so excited, I grabbed it, and there was only one left, and I went to pay for it. And just before I put my credit card in, I realized, wait, I already pre-ordered this. I have this. Oh, well. And so I bought it anyway.
All right. I've got two. Like,
Mary Roach is definitely somebody that... Yeah, when I grow up, I want to be like her. She's so cool and she's so fun. And I just...
She's amazing.
I would be nervous about meeting her because I think I would just pass out. She's just too cool.
Well, so I want to make this happen. I want to see you pass out from meeting her.
She comes in with a big spider.
Yeah, she comes with a giant tarantula.
Come with like a giant spider, and then I pass out from both joy and fear.
I think we should do a podcast.
I think we probably should. I mean, we're here. When we started this show, the idea was that the first segment would really be about us, like, this is what we talk about behind closed doors. And I feel like we haven't really...
Whatever happened to that?
But I was reminded of one thing that, like, really... It's one of my soapbox things. And I was reminded of it after moving here. Like, oh, right. So in your line of work, Sip, are there phrases or are there things that you see or hear in veterinary medicine that every time you hear it, you know it's coming from a good place, but you still just like get a little eye twitchy? Like,
I know he's limping, Doc, but he's not painful.
Oh, no.
That is all the time.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
Well, let's just talk about that instead. No.
No. I think you're leading me. You're leading the horse to water, but the horse isn't drinking.
No, that's okay. You don't have to drink. I was just curious. I mean, I know that there's many. The one that I have comes to you today with my least favorite phrase. It's okay. He's friendly.
We've touched on this one.
We've touched on it, but we haven't really done a big dive on it. So the reason I was bringing this up is because a few weeks ago I was walking Captain through. So yes, we live on this like very quiet dirt road, but like you can cut through the woods, over the river, through the woods to the little suburban cul-de-sac we go. And so like I can walk around over there. All of the dogs are on electronic fences. Nobody's behind a real fence. And so poor Captain sees these dogs charging up to him, very upset because basically like they're getting electrocuted while they're staring at my dog. So he's making them very unhappy. And he can't quite figure out why they're running up to him and then just stopping at this invisible line. And well, one of these dogs, it was a cute little puppy. I'm walking down and I'm expecting the dog to stop at an electric fence because that's what all of the dogs are doing in our neighborhood. But what ultimately happened was the puppy just kept coming. And I'm like, oh, and I'm in the middle of the street with Captain, who's not the most friendly dog when there's a dog charging at him. He's great with puppies. He's good with dogs who are smaller than him. But on leash, he can be an asshole. So this puppy is charging us. We're in the middle of the street and the puppy's crossing the street. And I'm like, oh, no. And Captain is just staring at the puppy like, that's a puppy. I'm like, yes, I'm aware. And the woman is standing in her yard in a bathrobe holding a cup of coffee going, it's OK. She's friendly. And I'm trying to articulate to her, he's not.
Right. Irrelevant.
Irrelevant. Your dog is running into the street. And to be fair, I think I saw like a car the whole time. But when I lived in the city, this happened all the time. Like I would have dogs cross busy streets to try to get to us that were off leash. Dogs hopping fences or escaping through doorways. Like, it's okay. He's friendly. It's like he's not or she's not with Sadie. Really turning the idea on its head that, like, maybe keep your dog on a leash until it's otherwise trained and recognizing that not every dog can handle being off leash is okay. Like, taking the idea of, yes, your dog needs exercise, your dog needs to walk, but you can't just let them off leash and hope for the best. Our neighbor's horse had two black labs enter the horse paddock and chase their horse around the paddock. And the owners are like yelling out to my friend who has the horse, oh, it's okay. They're just playing. This horse could have fallen and broken his leg. This horse could have kicked the two black labs in the skull.
Right.
This is a prey animal. This horse could have busted through the fence, which he had already done a week before when he busted out the neighbor's horse and went for like a moonlight walk in the woods. Any number of things can happen. And so making sure that if your dog is at risk of running off, the worst thing you can yell out is he's friendly, because it doesn't help the situation. That puts the onus on the other person to say he's not or she's not. Just put your fucking dog on a leash until you're confident that you can call them off of squirrels or horses or other dogs or people or traffic or anything. Like, your dog being social and friendly is not permission to let them run rampant through your neighborhood.
Right. This is fundamental pet ownership, good neighborliness, responsibility, miss manners level. Just don't.
I mean, I'm a professional. So like I have clients that have to deal with this, and they have dogs who are perfectly great dogs, who are lovely dogs, but the dogs can't have other dogs charging at them, very much in the same way if I'm sitting on a subway and some stranger comes running up and tries to hug me, I probably would bite too.
Yeah, right.
muzzle punch them with my head. So, yeah, it makes it a very uncomfortable situation. It makes it really unpleasant when you have to meet your neighbors. And luckily in the city, you might not know these people very well, or you could just kind of ignore them. But out here in the country, you're going to know everyone on your street. And if you're the guy who has the dogs who are chasing horses or just charging out into the middle of the road to say hi, or he just wants to play, it can really make things very unneighborly very quickly.
And as you know, there's the other version of that where you may have a dog that you know isn't great with just any old person, maybe really great with people they know or whatever. And the person's like, can I pet your dog? Actually, no, my dog isn't great with strangers. They're like, oh, no, but I'm a dog person. And they're leaning over your dog.
Like, if you could see my face.
Oh, my God. Yeah, like that is super bad dog etiquette, and also a way to meet a new plastic surgeon.
If the phrase that's going to come out of your mouth is, but I'm great with dogs, just stop. Because usually what follows is the most not great with dogs thing. One, you're ignoring the owner. And two, like, my favorite thing is like with off-leash dogs or people saying, but I'm great with dogs. It might not even be that the other dog or person, the other dog is not friendly. It might be that dog might have ringworm or might have like a zoonotic disease.
A contagious to people, in other words, zoonotic.
Yeah.
Fungal skin infection that you don't want, or has recently had surgery and is painful and you don't. Yeah. So respecting boundaries.
So when I teach my Canine Good Citizen classes, I'm always telling my students, look, there are these 10 requirements for the Canine Good Citizen. One of them is friendliness to a stranger. Part of that is somebody coming over and patting your dog. And the way that I teach it is, look, I don't care if your dog gets its Canine Good Citizen. I care that you're a good advocate. So I'll spend an entire class teaching people how to say no, do not interact with my dog, or being able to read the dog and coming up with a plan to put the dog behind you, or practicing turning your back on an oncoming stranger in the event that, like, even if your super friendly dog is having a really fucking bad day, because it happens to all of us, if they ate something, if they were feeling unsettled, if they, you know, we're just in an accident or have a zoonotic disease, or we're just spayed or neutered. Any one of these things could be great reason for that dog not to interact. And a dog being cute is not permission to say hi. Consent, consent, consent. It matters. And being able to teach people
to look for that. I love that you teach that in your class.
Saying no is the hardest thing in positive reinforcement training. Yeah. Thank you.
That's so cool. And I haven't heard that before, the teaching the humans how to say no to other people. You and I know this, but the bottom line of dog training is it's actually human training.
Yeah.
My niece, who's a very, very responsible adult, saw a dog that my sister's a veterinarian, And she was dealing with a rescue dog who needed surgery. And happened to send, every once in a while, she sends us pictures of cute dogs.
Aww.
And this was some sort of pity mix. It was like a long hair pity mix. And my niece, who's been sort of gearing up to trying to be ready for a dog and is responsible, she's like, oh, I want him. And, you know, we always text out like, oh, I want him. But you don't really mean it. In this case, she's like, no, I really want him. Like, okay, well, let's find out more about him. And, you know, I mean, again, she would never leap and then find out that the dog has whatever problems.
Right.
I couldn't help myself. I said in the text, so just remember, you're going to need the time to work with the trainer. And remember, that's you guys being trained, her and her boyfriend, and, you know, really able to do it right. So you have it. She goes, and her reply was, I grew up with my mother teaching me that. Like, she is the daughter of a veterinarian. She like sort of all but 50 emoji eye rolls. I know that dog training is people training. Yeah. So
in positive reinforcement dog training, the best way to set boundaries is to know if your dog is uncomfortable and to be able to advocate for it from other people or other dogs. And the hardest thing to yell out is he's not friendly, when that might not actually be the case. It might just be that the dog is not comfortable with dogs charging up to their faces, but that they could be otherwise super social dogs. Or like Captain, who's really great with most dogs who are smaller than him, and he's off leash. Then he's great. But on leash, he's just so fucking weird and he can't handle it.
I think it'd be great if you explain the off leash, on leash thing, which isn't, you know, a perfect recipe for every dog. Some dogs just need to stay on a leash. But can you explain that? Because I think we have touched on that in a podcast long ago in a galaxy far, far away. Trademark not recognized or properly observed. That what that instinct may be about.
Oh, leash barrier aggression or barrier frustration. So the way I like to explain it to my students is when you go to train, let's say, a canine for police work to do bite work, the way you do it is you stand behind your dog or you stand behind the police. There's a lot of nuance here, but like broad strokes. So do not think that this is exactly how you do it. But you stand behind the dog, you pull up on their collar, and you're basically kind of choking them a bit so they're getting stressed out while they are looking at the bad guy. Or the person that they're supposed to go take down.
And they aren't actually choking the dog.
Choking it out, but they're putting tension against the windpipe. They're making it harder for the dog to breathe. So the dog has to use its eyes more, and they're staring at this thing, and they're stressed out by that thing. And in this case, that thing is the person that you want it to go after and bite. And this person is usually wearing a bite sleeve, like in practice, and not in real life. And so when they let the dog go, they effectively have a bullet. And that dog is going after the thing that they perceive is making it harder for them to breathe, that is stressing them out. And that is the person in the bite sleeve. And so when they let the dog go, they hit the bite sleeve and they pull. And a lot of bite work is actually quite fun for a lot of dogs and the owners. But when you take that dog or any dog, your pug, and you put them on a leash and you're walking in a city and that dog is pulling against its collar to go say hi to another dog that's walking up to them, physiologically, it's similar in that you're triggering this kind of more adrenaline response instead of happy-go-lucky response. Dogs usually meet nose to butt. They work in circles. Walking straight at each other, being restrained, is very stressful for dogs. And so when we put them on leashes and we let them walk towards other dogs or other people, they can actually get more agitated. That excitement can trip over into frustration because they can't greet in a normal way.
And they are also picking up signals from you like, no, don't. And they think something's wrong.
And we're pulling
too.
Back. Yep. Yeah. And everything about the interaction is unnatural. And so when you have dogs who are barrier frustrated, you might see it behind a fence. Captain is very sensitive to fences, and somebody's on the other side, even if it's his favorite person. It's like, oh, that's a fence and I can't say hi and I'm frustrated and it's that person's fault I can't say hi appropriately. Leashes, windows, dogs who bark at the mailman. This is why mail carriers are the number one demographic for being bitten by dogs. Second to children under the age of 4, because, you know, for mail carriers are coming up and the dog is presumably behind either a fence or a window. And then the dog barks and the mail carrier goes away. I'm a big, tough dog. So bark, bark, bark. And then the mail carrier goes away. The dog amps up every time the mail carrier comes because now he's getting more confident.
Success, baby. I chased him away every time.
I'm a big, tough dog, says the teeny tiny schnoodle.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So barrier frustration is hard. And on the dogs and on the owners, because you just see escalating what we would perceive as maybe aggression or label it as aggression when that's technically not really what it is. When your dog is behind an electric fence and there's no physical barrier, you can still see that. There might be that like dog charging up to the edge of the fence line, which is what's happening with me and Captain now. And the dogs are bah, 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 bah. But there's nothing there aside from this electrical current going through their body. If a dog were to bust through that electric fence, there's nothing to stop them from getting to me and my dog. They also can't get back in because the carrot or the thing that they need to that they're magnetized to, that they really want to get to, isn't in their yard. So if they try to go back to their yard, they're going to get shocked. And those are the dogs I get to work with.
Ah.
He doesn't want to go out in his yard. Well, gee, I wonder why. He won't come home. I wonder why. He gets shocked every time he does. But going back to leash versus on-leash, teaching on-leash etiquette is important to be able to eventually get off-leash behavior. If your dog is pulling on a leash and you can't get them to pay attention to you from 6 feet and walk normally or with a nice loose leash, and they're 6 feet away from you, the length of a normal leash, how the fuck do you think you're going to get your dog to come back to you at 30 yards when they're chasing something that they really want to engage with?
Right. Right.
So it's really, really, really important to recognize the distance, the distractions, and get good training in a closer environment and being able to advocate for your dog. And more so for those who think that they have a friendly dog, you probably do, but not everyone else is, quote, so lucky. Although I would say I've learned a lot more from my dogs who are reactive and frustrated than I would from the, quote, affable golden retriever who doesn't, who's just like, oh boy, I love everyone. You learn a lot more when you have a dog you have to advocate for. And then once you see another owner working very hard to keep their dog from exploding, you have a lot more sympathy for that. And I think the most useless thing to yell out is he's friendly or I'm good with dogs. Maybe just listen to that owner and do what you can to make it be a good neighbor. And not just assume that because your dog is friendly, that everyone is friendly, because that ends up putting more pressure on the other owner.
I was going to say the two phrases to remove from your entire vocabulary.
I can't tell you how many emails I get that are like, can you teach my emotional support dog to stop biting people?
Yes. That's one of my favorites.
I am not feeling emotionally supported in this lesson.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. So that I can remove my soapbox now. Like, don't foist yourself or your dog upon people who are not ready for the interaction or who don't want the interaction. Saying no is enough. It's usually being mansplained about how to be a dog owner. When I'm walking my dog, that is the most frustrating thing. Well, I'm good with dogs. It's like, yeah, clearly.
Like, I just had this vision where, like, you know, what are the scenarios you come up with to deal with that situation when people won't listen? And you go, you finally say, I'm going to give you a choice. I'm either going to let my dog off leash and kill your dog, or I'm going to hit you with this stun gun. What do you want?
Seriously. There are days. I mean, I would never do it, but the fantasy is great.
Yeah. We're talking fantasies, people. We are gentle souls at heart.
Speak for yourself.
when we aren't fantasizing your complete demise.
Can you put like mansplainers into a Kong and give it to your dog?
Oh, I love that.
A little puzzle toy.
That's like a little like graphic cartoon. and it's just like
what we dream about. You think that your dog trainer and your veterinarian are going home to play with their puppies, but really they're just making comics about like shoving their worst clients into Kongs and like feeding it to their dogs.
We love most of our clients. We do.
We do. We do. I think a lot of this is going to get cut. Okay, I think it's your turn.
Yeah, okay. No one will ever come to see us again. Melissa, sit back.
Oh, dear.
Relax. And let me tell you about sex till you die. Record scratch?
Funny you say sit back and relax.
Wait a minute. All of a sudden, I'm...
All right, let's go.
Paying attention. There is a creature in Australia called the Antechinus. And this little fellow, when it comes to the males, has a short life, but he uses it as wisely as he can.
Oh, dear.
I love this quote from National Geographic. He was a virgin until now, but for 2 to 3 weeks, this little Lothario goes at it nonstop. He mates with as many females as he can in violent, frenetic encounters that can last up to 14 hours. He does little else.
Oh, no.
We're talking about each encounter, not a one-off.
Each.
Basically, we have a little marsupial, kind of shrew-like looking thing.
Okay.
That goes into a complete testosterone frenzy, is having sex for up to 14 hours per date. like speed dating, but not.
Like speed dating, but not.
And basically is like just destroying his body in this frenzy, like using up all the energy. Everything's going into sex. And so... like he starts to bleed internally, go bald,
no!
like in patches, and starts to get all sorts of infections because his immune system has said, adios, motherfucker. and then they basically look like shit because they're bald and falling apart, but they're still like frantically looking for more mates, like hot.
My God.
And at that point, like the females are... definitely avoiding them. Like, they're like, oh, no, that's a hard no. And and then, like, he's dead before he's a year old. You know, this all happened over a few weeks. He's building up to this point. He's storing up sperm. And then, like, he and all his frat buddies are kaput. Like,
they just really let themselves go after those first two 14-hour sessions.
Yeah, he's not even combing his hair, showering. This behavior, which is called semilparity, it means that they like mate once in their lifetime. They have one mating period of time.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be like a single partner, typically not. And salmon would be an example of that. But why? Why do they do this to themselves? Why do they have this limited time of sex frenzy and then croak?
Yeah, and I thought like after 4 hours you should get that checked. This seems like really unsettling.
Amazing.
Oh, God, evolution. Well, you really let yourself go.
So there's this researcher. Her name's Diana Fisher, and she's from the University of Queensland. And she thinks she's hit on a more practical theory than some people have posited, like he's just being unselfish.
Unselfish?
Like, seriously? Unselfish. Just, yeah. So these little marsupials live on a diet of bugs, and these bugs might only be available for like a really limited amount of time. So the females, in order to like gestate babies and then keep those babies alive, they need to be well fed, and then there's like this little window where that can happen. So basically the males want to like wham bam slam, thank you ma'am and miss and ma'am
and
as fast as they can. And not only that, you know, being marsupials, the babies come out like unbaked, unflated, not ready for prime time. They need maybe, you know, 4 months to reach the point of being able to not depend on the mom compared to days or weeks for, say, a similar sized placental mammal like a shrew or a mouse, right?
Oh, okay.
So like the rest, you know, the non-marsupial mammals, they can get their babies up and running faster in most cases.
Okay.
So this is like cross marsupial with limited supply, and evolution has produced
overproduced
what is that girls on girls oh has produced
girls gone, gone wild,
so yeah boys gone wild. So maybe the best part, Melissa, as far as our podcast goes, maybe worst part, is that species who mate like this tend to have really big testicles compared to their body size, like the ratio body size to testicles. So the best way to spread their seed really quickly, if you're an antechinus, is to basically bop like bunnies and then let your body parts fall off.
Oh my God. The testicles fall off?
No, basically they're falling apart.
Oh, so they're just like...
I mean, their whole body's falling apart.
So they're like your dad's like 1984 Volvo that just like he has put together with like duct tape and like wire coat hangers. Like, and he's got a guy that keeps repairing it. This is the animal version of that?
Yeah, maybe closer to my 72 Volvo and how I could actually see the ground through the floorboards.
Oh, dear. Like the Flintstone Mobile. I just want to tell the lady antechinas out there, lady antechinas, respect yourself. Like, just because he's a knockin' doesn't mean you need to pick up what he's putting down, which sounds like actual body parts. Like, don't settle.
And bald spots.
Don't settle for
clumps
the
of fur.
2 week past prime male antechina.
Have you had a chance to look up this creature?
I haven't. Is it safe for me to look it up now?
Here.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead and look it up. Animal, vegetable, criminal.
That's so good. Antechina. Oh, so good. No. That is... Nope. That is... I got a flapper doll pincushion. That is not it. You know what? I'll just type in sex for 14 hours and see what
that
comes up.
That will do that. Oh, my God. Don't do that.
Oh, I shouldn't have done that.
Listen, don't do that. I tried to stop you.
My eyes. Also, I just like to put out there, if you're going to a Quora forum to ask if this is a good idea, maybe you should stop using the internet. Oh, no. Okay. Actually, it's the second hit.
Amazing.
Oh, my God.
Amazing. Oh, okay.
So my,
you see a little guy?
So my Google mission. Oh, image was removed due to legal reasons. Hold on. Okay. You know
Wait,
what?
No.
Let's see if I can just. Oh, my God. He's so cute.
He's adorable.
Oh,
like
God.
He looks kind of like a slightly large mouse.
Well, I mean, the good news is here that they have him, they have all of them as, like, their before photos. Obviously, there's no...
Yeah, I haven't... Yeah, that's a good point. I haven't seen the after photos. They look like a mouse with a really long nose, like...
Yeah. Oh, wait, here's a dead one. Sorry. That came out way too more excited. Deceased male. Oh, yeah. I would usually refrain from posting a spotting of a dead animal, but this spotting is significant.
Oh, yeah. Here's a dead one. Yep. He's bald.
Yep.
And unattractive. He wouldn't want to have sex with him.
He looks like all like those bad taxidermy photos that I'm sure you've all seen. One of my favorite Twitter follows is Bad Taxidermy. And this looks like he should be a contender. He's a contender. I should have been a contender.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's totes not cute. Oh my God, his balls. You can see. Like, okay, so I'm, you know what? I'm just going to share this
with you.
Okay. Well, this is the audio we absolutely have to isolate. Oh my God, his balls. What, where? Hold on. Let me, here, I'll put it in the chat. He's upside down. He's clearly deceased. He hasn't been dead for long. I mean, rigor mortis long, but not like getting eaten long. Missing a lot of hair. His eyes are still not really glossed over. So he's, you know, recently dead, but his testicles are, that is, you know what? I think this is where the phrase amazeballs comes from. This is spectacular.
Yellow.
Maruga. Yeah, those are, I mean, maybe that's why the ladies are all over it until they even get to the point where they're like, pros don't outweigh the cons here. We're at the end of the podcast.
Holy antikindness balls, Batman.
Our music is by Jason Shaw, much to his chagrin, and additional music by Ableton Live.
This week, our thanks go out to Soapboxes by Melissa and ProjectNoah.org, NationalGeographic.com, and abc.net.au/science for great stuff on the antikindness.
Amazeballs stuff. You can find more on our show notes or visit our website, totallypossumpod.com, and our Twitter, @possumpod.
And now all that's left is shameless self-promotion.
I'm a certified professional dog trainer in Southern Maine. Woo! The author of Considerations for the City Dog, host of Bewilderbeast, another podcast for curious folks. But unlike this one, it is safe for kids and work and grandma. You can find out more about me at melissamchughmcgrath.com. Take a sip.
I'm a house call veterinarian who loves to work with exotic pets in and around Oakland, California, the operator of Zuzu's Puddles Productions, and when I'm not treating echidnas, antechinus, and wombats, oh wait, not really, you can find me driving around in my 2010 Honda CR-V on my way to seeing another exotic pet. You can find more about me and about exotic pet care at drsipvet.com. That's drsipvet.com.
You can reach us both at totallypossumpod@gmail.com. Trust me, we don't bite. Send us your topic ideas or questions. Send us bizarre and silly animal stories that might be on the wild side. It absolutely should be R-rated.
We've shifted into
Why even try?
Yeah, right. So that's it. That's the end of our podcast.
Thanks for listening. Hug your pets if you've got them.
Unless your pet is a randy antikindness, in which case I professionally advise against it.
And respect those opossums, or as we say,
stay possum. Whoa, there's a little video of one trying to mate. Oh my God. The female's way over it. God, okay, we won't discuss that. Okay.
Now it's a party.